Hey there, this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9, and we got some comments on an earlier episode with Uni that the commenter said, basically, why don't you build something real? So I asked the team to help us out with that. So why don't you introduce yourself and tell us what we're doing?
Awesome. I'm Navid Saxena, Program Manager in Visual Studio team. And today we are going to build an end-to-end universal Windows application using Visual Studio 2015.
Nice. So
let's basically get started with that. To build this application, we will be doing this in three different episodes. I will help you get started by getting the right tools, and then we will start building the application. So I will do an initial build-up of the application. We'll get some pages built. And after that, one of my colleagues will, in the episode two, will go and optimize that application to run on different target devices.
Oh, nice.
As you know, Windows 10 actually targets a huge range of devices. So we will cater the user experience of the application to work differently on a local machine, which is a PC, versus a phone, versus an IoT device.
And we got these all here, too.
Yeah, and we will be running the same application package on all these devices, and with a little bit different user experiences. That's the power of Windows 10.
I like it. All right.
And finally, in the episode 3, we will help you take that application that we have built, and we'll walk through the store workflow of how you will package that application and how that application will be published to the store and what the entire process to do that so that actually the end users can go and download this application and use it in the real world.
Awesome.
Cool. So before we go and start coding, we should basically, I want to make sure that you guys have the right tools to go and develop your application, right? So to get started, you should go to dev.windows.com, and when you reach to that web page, you can see that it has all the information that you need to download the tools required for building a universal Windows app. So you can get the Visual Studio builds right directly from dev.windows.com, and we have a Visual Studio Community Edition here.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you're running any older version of Windows itself, like Windows 7 or Windows 8 or Windows 8.1, you can actually upgrade to Windows 10 as well right from here. So you can go and click on this. It will take you to the website for Windows 10, and you can register there and download your free copy. If you are a consumer, you can download your, or a developer, you can develop or download a free copy of Windows 10 and then start developing for your Universal Windows application.
Nice.
So one thing that's interesting is when you install the Visual Studio and you click the setup, you will see something like this. Mm-hmm. We'll walk through the set of tools that you need for building your application.
Okay.
And when you are building a Universal Windows app, you need to make sure that you select the Universal Windows app development tools in Visual Studio setup. This will give you all the right compilers, all the right bits, including the emulators and SDK that you need for building your very first application. So make sure this is selected, and if you are interested in downloading the emulators, you should select emulators as well in the Visual Studio setup for building your application.
And this is important, right? Because Visual Studio RTM before Windows 10 RTM, and so there was a little bit of a gap. And so if you have the RTM bits of Visual Studio and later got Windows 10, you still need to do an update.
Exactly. If you have installed Visual Studio 2015 RTM before Windows 10 was released, you can still go to the setup, modify, and select the Universal Windows app development tools and install the bits required for building a Windows 10 application.
Awesome, awesome.
Yep. So that's pretty much it. That will give you all the right tools, and then you are ready to start building your first app.
Cool.
Today we are going to build a cookbook application, a very simple recipe application. So I'm just going to go and run this application first and demo it quickly of what this app will look like.
Okay.
So here is my application. I will go and run this app on the local machine. So this is the final version of the application that we have built. And I'm just going to launch a local machine first to navigate through and to see how the application looks like. So here's my app. As you can see, there are different categories of recipes in my applications. We can go and click on a particular recipe category, let's say appetizers, and give me a set of recipes which are appetizers. So let's say I click on steam bun. And when I click on it, it tells me all about that recipe. It tells me what are the ingredients that are required to make it, what is the prep time, cook time, how much time it will be required to make to prepare this, and all the instructions to prepare this recipe. Also, you can see is when I resize this application, it actually adapts. So it has an adaptive layout and adaptive user experience that when you're resizing this application, it actually changes its layout, and we will learn a little bit more today of how you can accomplish this for your application as well. Now I will go and deploy the same application on an emulator. So in Visual Studio, I'm going to go and select the emulator. So let's say a 4-inch 512 MB emulator. And we already have this launched. So you will see exactly the same application now running on a phone emulator as well. And you can deploy it to a device as well, which is connected to your machine. And here's the same app which is running on phone, and it's exactly the same set of categories. You can click on a category, you have a different set of recipes, you can click on a recipe, and you have the exactly the same thing. And you can see, while you're running on a phone, the layout is again a little bit different. Also, when you click on the back button actually works in the application. So we have actually adapted the user experience of this application to work a little bit differently on a phone device.
And these are all the same bits that are working, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's the same application package that's working, and we're using adaptive code to adopt the better user experience on different devices.
Awesome.
And finally, now we will deploy the same application on an IoT device. How cool is that?
Which is this thing right here, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's the Raspberry Pi, and as you know, it's a very cheap device. It's like $39. And you can buy it, and you can configure it to run latest version of Windows 10, Windows 10 RTM, and then we will deploy the same application on an IoT device. So let's actually go and do that. So let's see how it works on an IoT device. So Seth, why don't you plug in your IoT device?
All right, let's do this. Oh man, I didn't know I was gonna have to do hard things.
And so this IoT device is already running Windows 10 build, exactly the same build I'm running on my PC as well. And as an IoT device is booting up, you can see that as soon as the IoT device boots up, the application will be started by default. So we are just waiting. It takes like normally 15 to 20 seconds for the app to or the device to start.
There's blinking stuff happening, so
yes,
it's working.
It's definitely going to work. And
okay, so it looks like Windows is starting to boot up here.
Yeah, it looks like the Windows is starting. And what we have done on the IoT device is we are using the same version of Windows that's running on my PC, that's Windows 10 RTM. And on this IoT device, we have already configured my application, the cookbook application, as a startup app, right?
Okay.
So when you power the device, the application will launch it by default. And because we have actually connected a monitor to the IoT device, you should actually see the UI running on the IoT device itself. So that would be the cool experience.
So do you have to, is there anything special you have to do to enable it to be the startup app?
Yes, and this is all the instructions to do that. It's actually very well documented on the IoT page. So if you can see it here, I'm on dev.windows.com. If you go to the IoT samples, here it is a very simple Hello World sample for a C# project.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go down, here are some of the PowerShell steps that you can use to configure your application as a startup app on the IoT device. So what you can do is, what you need to do is go to the PowerShell command prompt, and then once you have configured it to work with the IoT device, you should type IoT startup, first IoT startup list. So IoT startup list will tell you all the applications that are currently installed on the IoT device. And then, for example, in my case, it's going to be a cookbook application. You copy the first part of the string for your application name, and then basically set up as IoT startup, add, headed, and the name of your application.
Got it.
Once that is done, your application is now configured to be a startup app when the IoT device is powered on.
All right, looks like it's actually booting up.
Yep, and here's the splash screen for my application. And we'll just wait for the application to be loaded as well.
Looks like you have a mouse connected to it as well, right?
Yes, and I can actually use the mouse too. So if you use the mouse application, you can actually go and click on a particular appetizer. And it's the same application, the cookbook app, which is running on an IoT device. How cool is that?
That's pretty amazing. And it looks almost exactly the same as the one that was on Windows.
Exactly. It's the same application package that's running on your PC, it's running on your phone, as well as running on an IoT device. That's the power of
Raspberry
Windows
Pi 2, right?
Yeah, that's the Raspberry Pi 2.
Cool.
So now we have seen the application running on all these three devices. Let's actually go and build the application.
Okay.
Right? So I'm going to go and start Visual Studio. So I'll close the setup, and I will start a new instance of Visual Studio.
Okay.
And we will basically start from scratch. So I will go and create a new project. So if you bring up the new project dialog, you will find the universal Windows templates to be located under Visual C# Windows Universal Node. This is for the C# developers. You'll find identical templates for VB as well as C++ and JavaScript languages. So I will select the blank app, and I will name it as Cookbook. So that's the name of my application. And I will go and create my project. So we have selected, we have started with a blank application template, which is pretty much, it's just have a main page and an app.xaml in it. And we'll take a quick look of what this template looks like. So if you have done previously any Windows development, I'm sure you have used these project templates as a starting point for your application. For a universal Windows app, the blank template is very similar to what it used to exist for Windows 8.1 application.
Okay.
There are small minor changes. As an example, if you go into the assets folder, you will see now there is a square 44 by 44 logo, whereas on Windows 8.1, it was 30 by 30. So we have changed some of the default scale factors for some of these images. So if you are migrating your existing Windows 8.1 app, you might have to go and change these things.
But that's not a really big change.
It's a very small change.
Couple of pixels.
Exactly. But just a difference that I wanted to call out. Also, we have a app.xaml, which is basically the application object file. We have a main page.xaml, which is the startup of my application. And we have a file called project.json. We will look into more detail about this, but your Universal Windows application is using NuGet 3.0. And with NuGet 3.0, we are moving away from package.config, and instead you're using project.json file. So it actually lists all the NuGet packages that are being used in your application. So we'll walk through what exactly this file contains and how it's being used a little later in the process. So let me just boot up my designer. So the very first thing for my application, so before we go start building the application, one more specific thing I wanted to call out. If you go to the properties, you will see two properties in the project. One is called target version, and another is called min version. And it's very important for developers to understand what these properties are.
Okay.
The target version, and both of these properties are currently set to 10240, which is Windows 10 RTM build, all right, SDK. So what the target version specifies, it specifies the API surface of your project, right? So what set of APIs are available to you is determined using the target version of the SDK, okay? Once we start shipping newer builds, so as Windows ships newer version of the SDKs, you want to go and install those and use and set the target version to a higher version of the SDK to use the latest and the greatest of the APIs.
Got it.
The min version determines what is the minimum version of the OS that is required for installing your application, right? So the min version is actually used by the store ultimately to filter your applications based on the OS the consumers are running on.
Cool.
So when we start shipping different versions of Windows 10, ideally you will set the target version to the latest version of the SDK to use the latest and the greatest APIs. And min version, you will always set it to the RTM so that you can target the maximum range of devices that exist in the world.
Got it. Right?
So now the very first thing we will do is, for in my application, I will go and add a recipe.json file, which will contain all the information about the recipes that I will be using in my application. So I will go and create a new folder called data. And I will copy the recipe.json file right into my project.
Got it.
So once I did that, I want to make sure that I have the right build properties set on the JSON file. So I will mark it as a content because I want to copy this into my application package. And I will set it copy if newer so that this, if I go and change this file, the Visual Studio will automatically package this recipe.json file in my application package.
And this is so we don't have to connect to databases because we're only worried about
exactly.
The UI in this case.
So in this case, I'm just trying to get, I'm using some local text to do that. Ideally, the recommended way will be to have an Azure database and you set up an Azure service to actually store some of this data and then connect your UWP application to talk to Azure to download this data.
Awesome. Yeah.
So I will quickly walk through the content in the JSON file. So it basically contains all the information of different recipes. Each recipe contains an ID, title, it says the serving size, a set of ingredients that are required to make the application. It also includes all the cooking steps, and it basically tells what the category of this recipe is.
Cool.
So very basic information regarding a recipe is captured in this file. So once I have got my data now, the next step would be to actually build an object model around that. The object model, the goal of the object model will be to parse this JSON file and build some data structures to collect all the information. So to do that, I will go and create a new folder called object models. And I've already created one, so just to save some time, I'm going to just go and use that object model, which is recipemodel.cs, and we'll walk over the code, what exactly this is doing. So let's open this file. So here you can see I'm getting an error because the NewtonSoft or JSON NuGet package is not currently installed. So let's go and fix that. So to install a new NuGet package, this has been always the case. You can right-click on the reference. You can go to Manage NuGet Packages. And here, you can go and search for the NewtonSoft. So here's the NuGet package that I need. So I will go and install. The version is 7.0.1. So I will go and install this in my project. I will say OK. And my package should be installed here.
Yep.
So you can see if I open the project.json, it actually now includes the NewtonSoft.json 7.0.0 version right here for the NuGet. There are some other NuGet packages that we are also using, like Application Insight. And Microsoft .NET Core itself specifies that .NET Core version framework is also being shipped as a set of NuGet packages. Now, if I go to the same recipe model, you can see my namespace is getting resolved. So here I have some different types. So we have a recipe model which is implementing iNotify property change. As you know, you need to use that interface so that whenever this particular all the properties inside this type changes, the UI gets a notification, and if you're using data binding, when this property changes, your UI gets updated automatically. So in the recipe model, all the different attributes that we were seeing in the JSON file, like ID, title, serving size, I've specified them as different properties in the recipe model, and everyone is basically implements the delegate property changed. Also, if you keep going, and we have some other types. So I have created one particular data structure called category item, which specifies the category information, and it includes the properties called category name, what is the name of that category, what is the image associated with that category, and that's pretty much for the category itself. Similarly, for all the instructions in the recipe, we have a data structure called instruction. It includes the instruction number, instruction text, and an image for the particular instruction. And the interesting class is recipe data source, right? And this is a pretty interesting class because this is where all the work is happening to actually parse the JSON file and get the data out of it. So I have created a function call get recipe from JSON, and you can see that it's basically creating a URI for the JSON file. Then it basically uses the storage file APIs to get the data and to get the file, and then uses the NewtonSoft JSON converter to deserialize the JSON into an observable collection of recipe model. So here I am getting the entire collection of different recipes in this collection. Now, the next one which we'll be using is the get all categories. So what this is doing, once we have get all the recipes, right, we go and basically just iterate through all the recipes and identify what category it is, and then we create a category, a collection of all the category items.
Got
right?
It.
And as we have seen, the category item just contains the name of the category and the image associated with it. So I parse all the recipes, and based on the categories, I basically create a collection of all the category items. And similar things I'm doing for a different method I've created is get recipes by category. So once you select a category, you parse that category, and this function, it actually gives you a set of recipes that are associated in the category.
It just feels like it's a way to load data and then get data by different.
Exactly. So it's just a set of APIs. That is what the job of these APIs is, to parse the JSON and then basically have some set of APIs to get the recipes, to get the categories, to get the recipes based on specific category. So that's pretty much my model is.
Awesome.
Right. Now, once we have our model ready, the next step will be is to build a view model, right? I need a view model so that I can bind that to my UI and get my UI working. So to do that, I'm going to go and create a view model folder. And again, I have created a view model already, so I'm just going to go and use that. So I have actually a couple of view models. So I will just go and use this. I will go and drag and drop into my this. And the interesting one here is because we are going to build the category page, I'm going to walk through what the category view model look like. So in the category models, it's pretty much simple. I have a property called all categories, which is an observable collection of category item. And I have a method which we already reviewed is get all categories async. So what it's doing, it's getting walking through all the recipes, identifying all the categories, and just returning a collection of that. That's what it's going to do. As you know, we are using some images in your application. You saw a lot of images being used. So let's go and add the images as well. So to do that, I would just go and drag and drop these images into my project. So we have just added all the images right here. So these are all the images that we'll be using in the application. So we have got our object model, we got our view model, we got all the images. Now let's go and build some views.
UI, yeah.
Yeah, so I will create a new folder called views. And I'm going to go and create a new page called categories.xaml. So that's what the initial page that displays all the categories in the application. So let's say categories.xaml add. So because this is going to be the categories.xaml is going to be the startup of my application, I will go and delete my main page. I'm not going to be using that. And because my app.xaml actually uses the main page as a starting point, I will go into the on-launched event and change this to main page to be views.categories. And this makes the categories page at the default startup of my application. Now let's go back to the categories page and start building the UI. So as part of the designing of my application, what one of my designers did, he basically created a whole bunch of resources saying that these are the styles that you should be using for your controls, these are the brushes that you should be using. So he already created a resource dictionary for me, which includes all the background brush styles and all the stuff.
Got it.
And I just need to import that into my projects to use those.
Cool.
So I'm going to just go and create another folder for resources. And I will go and add the resource dictionary right here. So here you can see my resource dictionary, if I open it up, as I was mentioning, it contains a whole bunch of different brushes and some of the styles that I will be using in my application.
Got it.
So once I got it, once I've added the resource dictionary, I also need to go and plug this resource dictionary in my application object so that it actually can reference it. So let's go and do that quickly. I will say application.resources. And right here, let's say resource dictionary, resource dictionary.merge dictionaries, resource dictionary source is equal to msapex://resources. /resources.xaml. And this is what it is telling me that in my application package, at the root of the application package, that's what all these three forward slashes signifies. There's a folder called resources, and inside that folder, there's a file called resources.xaml.
Got it.
And once I've configured, I can use all these resources in my application. So the first thing I'm going to go and change is I will change the background brush to one of the brushes that my designer has asked me to use, so which is app background brush. The name of the brush is pattern background, so I'm just going to go and use that. And so I start getting the same background that we were using in the application. That's what is here. And the second thing we are going to go and do is add a command bar. Right, so you can easily use the XAML designer in Visual Studio to actually add the command bar. You can right click on the bottom command bar and say add command bar, and this basically already generates some stub XAML for you. So it adds the command bar, it creates the command bar content and adds a couple of app bar button. Then you can go and change the icons and stuff like that to how exactly you want a command bar to look like. In my case, I'm just going to go and change the background to be static resource, app, doc, theme brush. So that's what my application was using. And just to save some time, I'm going to go and copy some of the app bar buttons that I've already created. So I'm just going to go and use these. And copy these here. And so here you can start seeing, if you can see, my command bar is now rendering. I'm using button command bar, and here's how it looks like in the designer itself.
Nice.
There's one more interesting property on the command bar, and that is the close display mode, right? This is used to see whether how you want to display the icons in your command bar. So if you go and set to minimal, you'll see the icons actually disappear. I want to make it visible by default, so I will make it as a compact, and that will make the icons visible in the command bar. Right. So once we got the, I got my background set up, and I have got my command bar initially ready in the page. So the next thing is to start building the UI to actually render the categories on the page itself. And to do that, we will be using the pivot control. Pivot has been a very popular control, and you can now use the pivot control on the UWP application. It works on a desktop as well as on phone, as well as on any other Windows 10 device. So you can go and search for pivot in the toolbox, and you can just double-click it to add it inside the grid. So here's my pivot control. And again, as part of the XAML, as part of the designer, we actually created some stub XAML for you as a starting point. So we have created a pivot, and we have created a couple of pivot items for
you.
Got it. Right. So the next thing is I will go and start authoring the changing the pivot itself to make it look what my application was using. So I will go and use the background. And again, in this case, I'm going to use the app doc theme brush. Right. And for the pivot items, I'm just actually going to go and get rid of the second one right now. But if you think, if you have multiple pivot items, like categories, favorites, and menus, you can keep adding pivot items and allow developers, consumers to actually scroll through them. Just to simplify things, I'm just going to keep one pivot item right now. For this pivot item, we have a grid. So for the pivot item itself, I'm going to go and use a different background brush. So I will say static resource, and I will use the pattern background work, which we are also using in the background. So it starts to look different from the background itself. And you can see a little bit of margin here, right? So we really don't need that. So I will go and clear the margin as well and set everything to be zero. So now you can see the pivot item expands, and this is what it looks like. I don't need the header, so I'm just going to go and get rid of the header itself as well. So that's what my initial pivot item will look like. Now, inside the pivot item, I have a grid, and I will be putting different elements inside the grid.
Right.
So we'll go and use some grid row definitions to actually split up the grid into two different rows. So I just copied some row definitions here. So I'm just going to copy it here and paste the row definitions right here. So what I have done is just created two different rows in the grid. One takes the 80 pixel width, and the remaining is taken by the second row. Now, one interesting thing is we actually created the app bar, the command bar, we actually created it as a bottom app bar in the page. But when you start using the pivot, in the case of pivot, it doesn't really, the bottom command bar or the app top command bar really doesn't work well with the pivot control. So the recommended way is to use it with the pivot right header. So what I'm going to do is create a pivot right header right here. And I will just move the command bar that we created for the bottom command bar into the pivot right header. And I'll get rid of this. So for a PC, let's actually switch to a desktop mode. So this makes it look a little bit better, because in the case of PC, I would prefer to have my controls and the command bar commands at the top.
Right.
Similarly, if you're running on an Xbox device, you would prefer to have it at the top instead of the bottom. So putting into the pivot right header allows you to do that. If you put it in the top bar, it actually conflates with the pivot and it doesn't work very smoothly. So if you're using a command bar with a pivot, the recommendation will be to put it into pivot right header. So once you have set that up, now let's go and build the categories page. And to display the categories itself, I will need a text block. So I can actually go and create a text block element. And I will set the text to be categories. We'll use the font size. To make it look bigger. And I was asked to use Sego UI for the family font. So I'm just going to copy these couple of properties and set it on my text block. So here it is. I'm using Sego UI Lite. The font weight is light, and I'm using Dark Text Brush for the foreground so that it looks correctly on my application. Also, I want the text block to be in the grid row, in the top grid row. So I'm going to say grid.row is equal to 0, and specifies it in the top row. So now the second step is to view different categories inside the categories page. And to do that, we are going to go and use a list view control. So I'm going to go and add a list view control. And I want the list view to be in the second row. So I'm going to say grid.row is equal to 1. And I will say grid.row span is equal to 2. And I think I made a mistake. Oh, it's already set. That's the reason I started complaining about it. So I will just go and delete. The same property was being set twice, and so our XAML parser was not happy about it. So we fixed it. And now I will go and reset the layout so that it actually goes and consumes the entire space, remaining space in the grid.
Got it. Right.
So once this is there, now the next step is to actually start using the data, right? And to do that, I will need to set the data context. While I'm designing my application, I want my data to be visible in the designer as well. So I'm going to go and use some design time data to be able to design my UI while working in the designer. So for this, I'm actually going to go and use Blend to do that. So I will right-click on this project and open this in Blend. As you know, Blend is a tool which is much more catered to the designer audience. With the latest version of Blend, it actually has a lot more experiences built, and you can actually go and use IntelliSense and stuff like that as well in Blend. We have done a lot of improvements in Blend for Visual Studio 2015. And right now, I'm going to go and use Blend to actually hook up some of the data. So let me just go and build this thing so that I know all the changes are here, and then switch to Blend to make sure I've picked up all the changes. Okay, I switched to
Blend. This looks eerily similar to building this stuff beforehand for Windows 8.
Exactly. So most of the, from a workflow perspective, it's very similar to do that. And again, right now with a richer set of APIs and with the support of Windows 10 on multiple devices, it just gives you a much more broader audience to target. But from a workflow perspective, it's very much similar to this. There are some interesting concepts that we will also talk about in future episodes of how to actually build adaptive layout, which are some of the new concepts that we have introduced in UWSL Windows app. So here's my category page in your Blend. If you have used Blend, I'm pretty sure you know much about it. Else, it's definitely good tool to use for animations, template editing, state editing. Blend is an excellent tool to do that. So to get some data, what you can actually do is you can go to the data pane in Blend, and you can say you can create the sample data from a class, or you can just generate new sample data from scratch. I'm going to go and create sample data from class. And here, it's actually displaying all the different data structures that exist in my application. So if I want to go and select category item, it will go and create a default set of sample data for that category item. I've already done that. So let's actually go and use it. So I will just create a folder called sample data. And then again, add my sample data file, which is categories view model, into there. So again, one small thing: once you have added the sample data or design data files, you just want to mark it as design data, so that it doesn't get compiled.
Got it.
And when you set the build action as design data, these files are not included as a part of the compilation process.
So this is a way for you to be able to have sort of fake data to make sure you're designing properly.
Yes, this is just to make sure I'm getting some data at the design time to design my application. Right. So here it is. Now I need to set the design time data context to be able to use that sample data. So I can go to the data panel and click on this link called Set Design Time Data Context, which already knows the file that we have added as a design data. And I click OK. So it actually goes and sets the default data context for my thing. And you can see that all categories is now visible here that I can go and use. Once my my data context is set, I will actually go and switch to Visual Studio to type a little bit more XAML and to continue building my application. So it's built. I will switch to Visual Studio instance. I will reload everything. And here's my app. Okay. And I will let it zoom a little bit here, right here. Now on my list view, I'm going to go and set the item source property. And to do that, I can actually go in the property inspector. So you can go to the property inspector, search for the item source. So here's the item source property. I will bring up the data binding dialog. And it says that there's a collection called all categories. I will go and select it. And it's bound to the all categories that we are getting from the data structure, and in this case, sample data. And it starts displaying that. But right now, I'm just seeing the type name. And that's really, I don't want my content to be rendered like that, right? So I need to go and update the item template of my list view to actually represent that correctly, the categories with the particular image. So I will quickly go and add an item template for my list view. So I'll go and delete this. Say list view dot item template. Inside the item template, I will create a data template. And for if you remember, when we're running the application, I was able to click on a particular category and it takes me to a set of recipes.
Right.
So I will be using a button in the data template. So I will just create a button. I have created a style for that particular. So you can see all the buttons are currently rendering on the designer. I have created a style for this button. So let's actually go and quickly use that. I don't want to type all this XAML right now, but we'll walk through what exactly this style looks like.
Cool.
So let's actually go to this and specify the style. And you can start seeing that data is now rendering correctly in the designer. So what happened here is we just created an item template. So let's actually go to additional templates, item template, and I'd say edit current. As I said, I was using a button in here, mm-hmm. and I'm using a different custom style on this button. So I can say edit template, edit current, and this is what exactly the XAML that we pasted. The control template or the button contains a canvas, and in the canvas, it contains a generic border, and I have applied an image brush on that border, and I'm using an image called category title. Right, so that's the white image that you are seeing. You can actually use the hide button in the design. So that's the white image that you're seeing in the image. So that's what is coming. It's being represented as an image brush in a
that's
border.
Cool.
And I have created another border. And inside this border, I'm actually again applied an image brush, which is which binds to the image path that is coming from the data source itself. Yeah. And finally have a text which represents the name of the category that is being used. Right. So that's what my item template looks like. And this is what is being used in the list view to generate all the items. Now, one more interesting thing is we have created the item templates. We have this button, but it's not interacting, right? So we need to hook up some event handlers to be able to click on this button and to navigate to the next page. And to use that, we will actually use behaviors. So if you're familiar, behaviors has been a popular concept. And the whole idea of the behavior is to add the interactivity in your application without actually writing any code. So we will be invoking an event handler, but we will not be writing any code to do that.
Interesting.
So let's actually go and use that. So
I don't think I've ever used behaviors. Oh, wow. So I've heard of it.
Let's actually look how behaviors work. Okay. So I have to do that, again, I will switch to Blend. I will reload all my application, all the files. Inside, I will go to the list view again. So let me resize the document thing. I will go into the list view that we have created. I will go into the item template that we have been using. And here I have the button. Now I have to basically enable when you click on this button, I have to go and take it to the new different page. So you can go to the assets panel in Blend. And in the assets panel, you will see a category called behaviors, right? And this displays all the different behaviors and actions that are available by default for a UWP application. For this case, I'm going to go and use an event trigger behavior. So I will drag and drop an event trigger behavior on the button. And what this behavior does is it allows you to specify an event name, right? And then allows you to say when that event is executed, what are the set of actions that you want to go and run.
Got it.
So in this case, by default, it's saying it will be enabled on the click event on the parent object, and the parent object is the button. So when the button is clicked, this behavior will get invoked, and it will go and execute some action. So let's go and add some action. In this case, I'm going to go and add a navigate to page action because I will navigate to a different page.
You just drag it on there.
Yep. I just That's drag really and drop cool. from the assets tool. I'm not writing any code, but I'm building interactivity. In
and
my
this is
application.
New in Blend for 2015? Or is
No, this
been
has
new?
Been there for Blend since Blend
Where
3.
Where have I been? Good grief.
The behaviors have been very popular with WPF, even with Silverlight applications, and we have extended that to Winrt applications as well.
Cool.
So I have added the navigate to page action. The only page right now is the categories, so we need a different page to navigate to. So I'm just going to go and add a different view right now, a temporary view. Let's call it as recipes.
So it's kind of an interesting flow. You're going between Visual Studio and Blend a lot, and that's
yes.
just the general way of doing things.
Yes. So there are a lot of, like, it's the power of the tool, right? I love using Visual Studio when I'm writing code, but when I'm designing the UX of my application, specifically I have to do control styling, or I have to build item templates, I have to do animations, or do custom states, Blend is a great tool to do that.
Awesome.
It's designed for that kind of thing. So that's the whole interop story, and interop works pretty well between Visual Studio and Blend. So I just added a blank recipe page here. Now if I go, and let me just do a quick build to make sure everything is building. And then I can go quickly back to my event trigger behavior and navigate page action. And here, you can now see that the recipe page is there, so I can select this. And what it is doing is, it's basically saying that recipe, what is it, when this button is clicked, go and execute this action, which is navigate to page and navigate to the recipes page. So that's pretty much it. Let's actually build it. Switch back to Visual Studio, and you can actually run it all from Blend as well, but let's actually go to VS, where we have been doing most of the work. Reload the application. And now start executing and running this application on different target device. So here I have my app, and I let's go and run it on the local machine. And my data doesn't render. And can you tell me why?
Because you did it for design time, but not, okay, see?
That's correct. You have been paying attention.
I used to write real code at one time.
So we have hooked up the design time data context, but the design time data is not available at the runtime. So we need to actually hook up the data context in the running application as well. So to do that, I will open up the categories page, and here I will create a private property saying category. Model. Let me make sure I have spelled it correctly. Categories view model.
So you can do this both in code and also you can do it in the XAML as well.
Yes, you can do it in the code. I'm just doing it in the code right now. And I just wanted to show the light bulb as well with a pretty cool feature in the editor. You can just hover over it and fix up the namespaces. I say categories view model. And here, I will initialize this type. And now I'm going to go and set the data context as a part of the on loaded event. So I will select the page on the event handler. I will click on the loaded event. And now in the loaded event, first I will call the categories view model.getAllCategories async. That's the API that we have created to get all the categories from the JSON. Since it's an async function, I have to use an await key operator. And because I'm using await, I have to use async. I made the method as async, just call that. And now here I will set the data context is equal to categories view model.
I think we're missing a curly brace for the namespace.
For the class, and let's add that. And we are good to go, right? So that's pretty much it. Now my data context is being set for the runtime of the application.
So here's a question. When I've done these before, I've generally set the context in the constructor, or I've done it in the XAML. What's the benefit of doing it on the page load? Why are we doing the page load?
I'm just differing it. I don't want to, when your type is getting initially constructed, you don't want to do any heavy work of like actually getting the stuff data from the JSON file and then setting things. So I'm just delaying it to the on page loaded event.
Because then it'll freeze at object construction and not
exactly.
After the,
Exactly. That makes sense. That's the only reason I'm doing it in the page loaded. So now let's actually go and run the application again. And this time we should see some real data here. And here you go. You have your categories, and you have different appetizers, and because you have hooked up the event handler, when you click on it, it actually takes you an empty recipe page.
What's that thing at the top left-hand corner, the numbers?
So let's actually go and run the application again. So yeah, these are these are displayed by the XAML runtime itself, and this is for the performance of the applications for the rendering, right?
So this is a debug time.
Yeah.
Okay.
These are only displayed as a debug time, and these are just to display the it's basically the runtime performance of your application from the rendering perspective. That's what it actually displays. So that's we ran the application on the local machine. Now let's actually go and select the emulator and make sure the same app is actually working on the emulator as well.
We really haven't done anything to optimize for
it. Yeah, we have not done anything. It's just the basic layout that we have created. We will just run it on different devices. And in the second episode, we will go and start changing the experience of this application to work differently on different devices and kind of optimize the user experience.
Got it.
So here is has the same app working on the phone. You can click on it, and it actually takes to the recipe page, which is pretty much empty right now. And finally, we have the IoT device as well. So for an IoT device, you have to use the remote machine as a deployment target.
Mm-hmm.
And when it brings up, you will need the IP address for the IoT device. So we have a tool called IoT Watcher. Once you have connected your IoT device.
So where did you get IoT Watcher?
So it is on the Windows IoT page itself.
Oh, okay.
So you can go and download the tool from there. And once you start that, once it detects any IoT devices in your subnet, it will actually display directly here.
Oh, well, that's handy.
And yes, I can copy the IP address. I can put it here. And I can say authentication to none and select that. Now we will try to test the same application on the IoT device as well.
Okay.
And to do that, we have to go and use the remote machine as the deployment target. Right. So because the IoT device is an ARM-based machine, I will change the configuration to ARM and select instead of device. It basically we default to a device. And you can go and change it to remote machine. And then you need to specify the IP address of the IoT device that you are running on. Mm-hmm. So for to do that, we are actually going to use a tool called IoT Core Watcher.
Oh, so where do you get this from?
You can get the same tool on the Windows IoT webpage that we looked before. There's a tool, a download link there that will allow you to install the IoT Core Watcher.
And how does it, just polling on the network or what's
Yeah, so what it's doing is basically once you start running this tool, it detects any IoT device which is in the subnet it actually gives you all the information about that. So right now I have one. I will copy the IP address here and specify that in the IP address. I will mark the authentication as none and select this device. So now Visual Studio will default to remote machine as a target. I will start running my application, and the same application that we have deployed to PC and emulator will now also deploy to the IoT device.
So is it pushing it to this right now?
Yes, that's what is happening. It's actually connecting to the IoT device, and it's deploying that.
I shouldn't touch it.
And it's deploying the same app on the IoT device itself.
And so we're going to see something changing on this screen over here then,
yes.
Or at least we should.
We should see that. So it's registering the layout, and it takes like a few seconds to be able to copy all the bits required and then register the application with Windows.
Because it's doing it over the network.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, looks like it's doing something over here.
And that's where it happened. It started my application right here on the IoT device itself as well.
That's the happy box when we finally got something to work.
And if everything goes smoothly, my application should be running there as well. And here it is.
Oh my goodness.
Same app running on this. And you have the mouse right here on the IoT device. You can click on any of the link and it will also take you to the blank recipe page. So that's you have your same application that we built. We started just to summarize, we help you get the right tools. You can go to dev.windows.com to get the right Visual Studio builds and make sure you select Universal Windows Development Tools in Visual Studio if you want to develop a Windows 10 application. Then we started with a blank application project.
Right.
We added the view models, the model, and the different views, the category view for the application. We used the new Newtonsoft JSON NuGet package in my application. And then we basically hooked up the basic category page. We used behaviors for navigation, and that's what the initial startup of your application. So that's the first part of the episode. And now in the second episode, you will learn more about how you can actually author the experiences for different devices and make your user experience catered to a different set of devices using adaptive triggers or device-specific family views.
That's awesome. So it feels like it feels like nothing really has changed.
Yep, from Windows 8.1.
Well, at least for this episode,
yeah.
There's some, obviously, I'm looking at the how you develop the app, but it feels like if you're developing a store app for Windows 8, if you're just going to do the basic thing, it's pretty much the same, except now you can put it on other things.
Yeah, exactly. So the workflow has not significantly changed. And exactly the experience from a developer is still pretty much the same way as you were doing for Windows 8.1 or even for Windows Phone 8.1. But now the breadth of the platform is huge. So it's a great opportunity for developers to build it.
Like this little thing is running Windows. That's pretty amazing. And you actually, because if you look at the screen now, it actually went back to the one root 4 because we were actually debugging on this for a little bit.
Exactly.
So that's really cool. All right. Well, that was the first episode. We got a couple more coming. Thanks for watching. Thanks for spending some time with us.
It's a
pleasure. We will see you next time. Take care.
Thank you.